Spending a little time this morning on K1 with State Senator, or you know, I'm sorry, U.S. Senator James Lankford, and looks like you've had a busy week. I want to start with the proposal that you had on a conservative fix to DACA. I think it's called the SUCCEED Act. Is that right?
That is correct, actually. Good to be able to be with you again. The problem that we've had for so long is we have ignored the issue about these DACA students that are here, and it just said not the DREAM Act, but have not done the hard work to say what we are for. We spend a lot of time saying what we're against, but not what we would actually support. So Tom Tillis and I, who's the senator from North Carolina, partnering together to be able to go through what would it take to actually solve this issue of DACA. When the president said, in 6 months, I'm going to end DACA, but I want a legislative fix, and he was very clear from the beginning, I want these students to be able to stay, but I don't want to just ignore the problem, but we've got to do this through legislation. Tom and I went to work to try to work with the White House and to be able to work with other colleagues to be able to resolve it. And it's a way that these students could earn the right to be able to be here. We as Americans take very seriously our citizenship and the ability to be able to be in this country, and that is an earned right for everyone that's not born in this country. These kids are a unique situation, though. These kids often came to the country when they were 6 months or 2 years old. They grew up in this country, didn't know another country. Their parents brought them illegally, but in American law, we don't hold children accountable for the actions of their parents. So these kids literally know no other country, and so trying to be able to figure out the process of what it would take to be able to establish some kind of stability for them.
And I realize that whatever gets passed, it may or may not be what's proposed, but what are some of the requirements, or what are some of the parts that the listening public needs to know about what would be asked of these youngsters?
Yeah, so individuals that were 16 years old or younger before 2012, they had to be in the country before 2012. That's when the DACA program started. It's very important to us that we're not attracting additional people to try to come into the country. So if they were here before 2012, they can go through an application process. They have to show they're in school, at work, or join the military. They have no criminal record. Their taxes are fully paid. They're able to get a five-year conditional residency into the United States. That allows them to travel, work, go to school, get a job, have employment, all of those things. 5 years later, they can renew that for another five-year time. It again allows them those same things. After that, if they again show no criminal record, they show that they've been in work, been in school, been active in the military, then they can renew and get a green card at the end of that. So it's a five-year period. At that point, if they've earned it, then they've earned the right to be able to have a green card. At the point they have a green card, they can stay in that status forever, or at some point, at least 5 years after that, they can apply for naturalization. But it's a 15-year process, which would be the same length of time it would take if they were applying for that, if they were in Central America or in Mexico. So we try not to put anyone ahead of anyone else in line. You've got to be able to earn the ability to be able to be here and be in line just like anyone else.
The president has been busy traveling this week from Puerto Rico to Las Vegas, and I know that the shooting in Las Vegas has certainly captured the airwaves news-wise, whether we're talking about the shooter or whether we're talking about the president's trip to visiting the victims of that shooting in Las Vegas. And I heard a story of at least one man who stood up out of his hospital bed just to shake the president's hand. As you look at the situation, Senator, yes, we want to continue to support the Second Amendment, but on the same hand, it seems as though this man had a lot of things that much of the public would say he didn't need to have.
Yeah, so the challenge that we have in any situation like this is how many laws that he broke in the process. He had violated so many laws by carrying these weapons to a casino, by obviously having shooting out windows and then killing people. So there's a lot of laws that he broke. And so the first question to ask is there a law that could have been put in place that would have prevented this? Because he already had so many laws that he had to break to get over the top of it. One of the questions that's come up is the bump stock issue. And now that's something that's worthy of research to be able to look at, to be able to establish. That was originally designed for a situation where someone who had a handicap or some kind of inability to be able to use it, to be able to have an easy way to do it. Obviously, it can also be used to transition a semi-automatic rifle into something that functions more like an automatic rifle. Automatic rifles have been illegal in the United States for decades. You have to have a very special permit to be able to have those in the United States. And so it's a legitimate question to be able to ask, is there something unique about that? Would that have stopped this shooting? No, it wouldn't have stopped this shooting. So the challenge that we face is so many of these issues like this, there's not one more law that actually shuts it down. So there are other ways that we need to look at it. We can't ignore this, though. We have to be able to ask serious questions. That's entirely appropriate to be able to go through the entire situation, determine motive, to see if there's anything that could have made a difference and would make a difference for the future. So I think we should have the conversation on Capitol Hill about that. Some people get nervous about Second Amendment when you have those conversations. But quite frankly, I think it's entirely appropriate to ask the questions. But knowing that we are a nation that is very strong in our protection of our Second Amendment and should continue to maintain that.
Tax reform. The president has made his proposal, and again, I'll caution that whatever gets passed, if anything gets passed, it probably is going to be different than that proposal. Where do we go now from tax reform? First time on three decades.
Oh, it would be a tremendous feat to be able to get tax reform. And so many people will say, well, what is the big deal about tax reform? Well, the problem is that our economy right now is stuck. For the last 10 years, our economy has grown at less than 2%. That may not seem like a big issue, but that's millions of additional jobs if our economy grows just as our economy is used to growing over the past century. So we've got to be able to find out what's making our economy so stuck. It's obviously the regulatory issues, it's some trade issues, but it's also our tax policy. If our tax policy is slowing us down and preventing companies from starting new businesses and creating and expanding, paying people more, adding on additional jobs into workforces, then we've got to be able to fix that. So this is a sweeping tax reform that's being proposed on the individual side as well as on the business side. Both of those are entirely appropriate because a lot of small businesses are really run through their family finances. So you can't do just business tax reform without doing individual reform as well to be able to help small and medium-sized businesses. Over the next month, there'll be a lot of debate. It'll go through committee in the House and the Senate. There'll be a lot of detail that'll be added to it. And then I would think by the time we get to November the 1st, there'll be a lot of the framework will be beyond just framework. It'll be a lot of detail, and people will be able to talk through how this will specifically affect them. I think there will be a tremendous benefit for people that especially that really struggle would make, let's say, $20,000 a year or less. That really struggle already on paying taxes and some things. I think that'll be the greatest benefit area. But I think the second biggest benefit area will be the start of new jobs across the country.
Certainly one big step, as I view it, is we are getting closer, probably not going to get there, but closer to being able to do our taxes on something resembling a postcard.
I would love to see it just be simple. I have never met someone that says, I do my taxes, and I know it's absolutely correct. There's always a sense of maybe there's a deduction I missed, or I hope I filled it out correctly. It's so complicated. The 1040 form instructions now are over 100 pages for just the first form on the 1040 form. That doesn't include all the other forms if you have to make any other changes. We've got to be able to simplify this system and allow people to be able to know that they did it right, number one, and most people, when they do it, they think there's a lot of deductions here, but they seem to be for everyone but me. So we've got to be able to clean this out.
Real quickly, you gave an update on the Select Committee on Intelligence. Can you give me just a real quick review of that report?
Yeah, we did an update, kind of a midterm update on what's happened so far on the Select Committee on Intelligence, researching out what the Russians tried to do in our elections, how they tried to interfere with us. The basics that we want to be able to get out is that we've done 100 interviews so far. We've gone through 100,000 pages of research. We have 4,000 pages of transcripts from the interviews that we have. We've covered a lot of ground. We're not finished yet. We're getting closer. Our main issue at the end of it is we want to be able to answer all the questions when it's over. When people ask us, did you research, did you talk to this person, we want to be able to say yes. Some of the areas we've hit a wall on, like the famous dossier that's out there that no one can seem to substantiate to determine if that's fact or fiction. As we try to approach the person who wrote it and to be able to find out the person who paid for it, we've not been able to visit with the person who wrote it. He continues to stay in England and refuses to be able to visit with us, and then also cannot seem to find out who paid for this report, because that makes a big difference of who was trying to pull it together. But a lot of other details are coming together for us at this point. We hope to have a final bipartisan report out in a few months.
Sounds wonderful, Senator. There are a lot more we didn't cover, but you're a busy guy, and so I need to move along. Senator, thank you so much for the call-in. Always appreciate your time.
Glad to be able to, Charlie. Take care.
Thank you. Senator Lankford with us today on K1.